Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Focus on Albany. I'm Cynthia Pooler, and my guest today is my friend Jason Mufford. Now, Jason is a high school teacher, and we're here to talk about the school shooting that happened in Florida on Valentine's Day. Jason, were you in school? Were you teaching when it happened?
In fact, I was, but I do need to state for obvious reasons that I need to be very careful not to disclose specifics about my actual school as I'm speaking as a citizen not representing them. But as a citizen,
right,
I can say, yes, I was working as a school teacher as the shootings were unfolding. We were mostly not aware of it at the time because it was fairly late in the afternoon.
Okay, so when you heard about it and when your students heard about it, what was the reaction?
My students mostly wanted to know what would motivate a person to do that kind of thing. And I will say I had perhaps the most honest conversation I had with our we call it advisory. It is a homeroom in which we get into issues of character and integrity. It's not just checking them into the day. And so we had our most honest discussion about what we thought would motivate a person to become a mass shooter. And as a collectively, volleying the ideas back and forth, we got into a discussion of people who felt alone in this world. That is, they didn't feel connected enough in the first place to value somebody else's human life. We broached the subject of whether that makes somebody mentally ill or not, and I posited that while there are definitely some cases where that is true, that is not something that can be assumed. I counter-posited that, you know, look at how our politics are nowadays, or even just how we handle opinions about favorite TV shows, things that used to be opinions where disagreeing was a fine thing to do with your friend, nowadays tend to end friendships, tend to isolate people. You know, it really, I asked them, I said, does my idea seem reasonable in your eyes that, you know, when you disagree with somebody now, can you still be friends? And they said that's a hard thing to do. And I said, well, what if it's just an opinion? It's, you know, like it is your favorite TV show and they like a different show. And we got into talking about how online there's massive trolling and cutting down on people. I mean, it's one thing they said when you hang out with your friends and you're kind of cutting on each other, you're doing it playfully, but, like, you really do have the other person's back. And when stuff gets real, you're not cutting on each other. It's more of like a sibling thing. Like, nobody can pick on my little brother but me. And, you know, I was happy to hear that they were seeing that that was a potential, you know, they were connected to other human beings, that they cared about other human life. But it also, I think, helped resolve in their minds that, you know, maybe when there's, like, the one strange kid who you all joke about, if we ever going to have a tragedy, he's going to be the one, which they said about the Parkland shooter in middle school. Not my students did, but his colleagues, his classmates had joked about that. They saw the value in reaching out just to be friendly with someone they don't know who's in their environment instead of being insulated in their own place. It helps both that person and it helps them just stay connected. So that's where we were Thursday morning with our conversation. And it was one of the best conversations I've had with students in well, I'll say multiple years, actually.
Now, what's so upsetting about this is, of course, you and I are from different generations. And, you know, back when I was, like, in school and in my early 20s and 30s and so forth, this was unheard of. And it's becoming so common. It's becoming so commonplace now. How do the kids respond and react to this constant barrage of violence against other people in this society?
It's a mixed bag of emotions for them. Are you there?
Yep, I'm here.
Oh, wow. Okay, sorry. My phone disconnected for just a split second. I thought the show was gone. As I was saying, it was a mixed bag of emotions for the students and as well as teachers, admins, staff. We look at the issue, and this I kind of got more into this with the people I've been talking with, not just my students. Like you said, we didn't used to have these problems back when, but we did. We had the guns back when, so it's not that all of a sudden guns came in and changed things. That's part of the problem, but it's not the cause of the problem. It's more of a factor that helps exacerbate the problem. So then we talked about, as I said earlier, you know, occasionally there's cases that really are rooted in some kind of mental illness, but it's not like the mental illness numbers have changed much either. We might be better at diagnosing it, but as a cross-section of population, so it's not like that got introduced and that's why we have it. And I think most stunningly, we look at other countries that do have access to weapons, and they are not really following in our footsteps on this one. So those can, stating it that way, I don't see those as the reasons why suddenly we have these issues. I see it's more, like I was saying earlier, about how did we connect with each other as a society? Are we really looking at each other, or are we looking past each other? Is a lot of times we talk about somebody did something to send a message. And even that language is kind of one-sided. We don't really talk about, well, who's receiving the message? How was it received when we say we're sending a message? So it's just, I feel like we have created the kind of culture that disconnects people. And when somebody gets so disconnected, they're not put in, like, lots of little small moments of being put in check. They just become their own echo chamber, or like in the case here where he participated in a nationalist group, not only did he have an echo chamber, he actually found people who were going to prop up his echo chamber.
So, you know, I find this whole thing so disconcerting that, you know, a few months ago it was Las Vegas, and it's a constant stream, you know, of these incidents. And I'm just so curious, where is it coming from? I mean, this never used to happen to to America before, and now it's almost routine.
Well, I mean, back, and this might even be before your generation, or maybe this was you growing up, we used to talk about the American can-do attitude. You know, we were working as a team together to make a better place to be. And so the whole, like, Levittown experiment and branching out in the suburbs, that was from a mindset where people were working together, even strangers working together. And that's not where we are today. You know, like I said, it could be something as strong as politics, or even just who writes the best music or has the best TV show. We treat opinions as facts more readily today. And when we treat an opinion like a fact, well, now a fact can be right or wrong. And we start asserting more against each other who's right, who's wrong. Opinions were just opinions. You would say, oh, I like this. Well, you like that. Hey, guess what? We can still be friends. You know, nobody needs to win that conversation. But I think today the culture is we need to win more of our conversations to, you know, to get more likes, to get more upvotes. You know, the internet certainly, I'm not going to say is the cause of that, but they definitely celebrate having to win a conversation more than pre-internet days.
Now, there's a 24-hour news cycle now. You get your left and you get your right. And do you think the 24 news cycle is a factor in what's happening?
I think it might help us be a little more numb to things going on. You know, we want to know things as soon as they happen because we think we should have access to all of that. It winds up, you know, more often than not that the amount of journalistic misreporting has certainly gone up in the last two decades. You know, something goes out there and then you have to reel it back. So one of the things was a report went out how there were 18 school shootings. And that blew up the internet for about 15 minutes. And then somebody had to come in and say, well, yeah, but how did you define a school shooting? And that included accidental discharges that hurt nobody that just happened to be on a school campus, possibly even when school wasn't in session. So, yeah, we have a lot more mass shootings, but, you know, at the same time, the more sensational and immediate the headline, the more traffic flows there, the more ad revenue comes through. And so we're a little bit more yeah, go ahead.
I'm sorry. There seems to be the students are speaking up, and they're talking about mass demonstrations in April.
They are.
What do you,
I saw that.
What do you see as the politicians don't seem to be doing much. You know, I remember Obama going to the different places and he'd have tears in his eyes and he'd mourn with the parents and the relatives and the friends, and nothing was done. What can be done to solve this problem, if there is anything that can be done?
There's definitely stuff that can be done, and I'm about to take this conversation to some places that I haven't seen it taken to yet, or at least the voices are kind of not as well heard. So here's an idea that actually was posted in an opinion in New York Times last year, just nice and simply raising the age of gun ownership up to 21, the same way that it has been raised up for alcohol, and now it's starting in many places for cigarettes. You know, that obviously will not fix all of the problems, but we're seeing a lot of these shootings are coming from people who are in that age range, and having a few more years before you can have access to a gun might actually eliminate problems from future shooters we wouldn't even know would be future shooters. But then here's where I'm going to go kind of really maverick. As I was researching, knowing you know, we had set up this interview, I noticed that the FBI had a tip that could have prevented the Dylan Roof from purchasing his gun for the attacks that he did. There was the military forces with the Texas church shooter. They knew that he had been a domestic abuser, but that information was kept within the military courts and never really made it outside of that that realm. And then he became a mass shooter. You know, and then here we have news that even this attack, there was a tip given very early in January, and it was not acted on. So what I was wondering is we have a lot of great new technologies emerging. We have now driverless cars that are being experimented with and actually out on the road. We have artificial intelligence. I think IBM has one called Ross that in the last 2 years actually passed the bar, is now a practicing lawyer doing bankruptcy cases. You know, and just this week, Boston Dynamics came out with a robot. Everyone says it's a robot dog. And it does kind of move that way, but for the first time, it was able to, on its own, figure out how to open and hold the door for one of its fellow robots before letting itself through. So we have a lot of artificial intelligence that's going to a lot of different areas, and I just cited three cases in which FBI had information they did not act on, and I'm wondering, especially with regards to IBM's Ross, that is legally a practicing lawyer as a computer program, why we don't actually have artificial intelligence that scans the information we already have. So I'm not talking new, deeper levels of surveillance on American citizens. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm saying FBI and other intelligence agencies already have the information, and they either don't realize they have the information, it's somewhere else in the database, or they're not following their own protocol. And I'm thinking an artificial intelligence could just do a cursory sweep. Anytime a new piece of information comes in, scan through the system. Does it connect to another piece of information? Is that something that could be brought to the attention of a human? Or, hey, here's a new piece of information. What's the protocol? Well, you have to have this file by this time and notify this superior by this time. All of those things could automatically become reminders on a calendar. Hey, that case, that tip you heard about yesterday, did you report this yet? Is it in my system yet? I scanned the system. I don't have this piece of information at the next level yet. That's a massively missed opportunity for us. And again, it won't stop all mass shooters, but that's three pretty big cases that would have been stopped if what I just suggested were in place 2 years ago.
Now, did you ever take this particular concept that you just outlined, did you ever take it to an elected official or somebody who might take it up in the halls of government and act upon it?
Well, since it was something that actually, honestly, only occurred to me in the last 24 hours, I know you'd wanted to interview me a few days ago, and I knew my schedule was busy, but today, I sat down, I really started researching more into the area, you know, not so that I didn't just speak on what I thought I knew, but that I really went back and checked, like, this really happened this way, and this really did this, and I only started connecting those dots today. So what you suggested about taking it to a politician, that's my next step, is to reach out and say, hey, I have this idea, and you need to go speak it out on the, you know, either the state Senate or Assembly, or better yet, just on the U.S. Congress level.
That would be very interesting, and I'd like you to come back on Focus on Albany when you initiate that dialogue with a government official. So let me ask you this. There's been a rash of school shootings. Do you feel safe? And do your kids feel safe and comfortable going to school today?
Considering today's a Sunday, they would be very upset going to school today. But aside,
I mean,
was actually impressed. We just went into this happened on Wednesday. We had Thursday and Friday, and we've just gone into winter recess. And
Right. Our
attendance rates before a week off are typically the absentee rate skyrockets. And I would say my attendance rates were really, really high. Most of them weren't saying they felt unsafe. I mean, they were concerned, and they wanted to know what to do if something happened in our school. But, you know, that would have been the time for families to keep their children home and be worried and everything. And instead, it worked almost the opposite way, or if it's at all connected, it might just be purely coincidental. But we had the highest pre-vacation attendance I think we've had in our 10 years. So I guess
great.
Their feelings, Dave. Yeah. And as for me, I really I listen very well, and when we get our procedures for what to do, if there's a lockdown, if there's this, if there's that, a story I can share, because now it's a few years old, we had done a lockdown drill, and it was a period that I did not have students. And so I positioned myself locked down in a contained area. It was a utility closet, because that happened to be closest to where I was at the time. And our protocol, only certain individuals can free us from the lockdown drill, even when it's a practice. And the person who knocked on my door was the wrong person. So I remained absolutely silent, and it took about 20 minutes before somebody realized that I hadn't been properly relieved from my position, you know. And it was it wound up being both a moment that we could chuckle over, but at the same time, it led to a good conversation with the faculty saying, and this is why we have the protocols. I feel very safe because this is morbid, but I understand that a lot of these lockdown drills are not just written by people at the one school where a teacher happens to work. There's advisory documents out there that are coming from places like the FBI and the local police force and the state police force saying, we've had so many shootings, we know this works better than that. And so the policies, the procedures are all based on the data that's been collected. And it's sad that we have this data, but as long as we do have it, I feel very safe about most lockdown drills. If protocol is followed, it really does, you know, it would seem to want to reduce the actual outcomes. Or I should say, reduce the injuries and the murders.
This to me is like the crux of the problem. This is happening more and more frequently. Do you think at some point it'll go back to we'll never have this again, or will this problem just keep escalating? And in your view, what do you see as the solution to this problem?
All right, I'm going to tackle that first part first. I don't think it will grow exponentially. We might still be in that phase where it's increasing, but I think it's going to level off and even come back down a bit, especially as students go out and do this march in April. More individuals, I think, are getting fed up. The fact that this is on the coattails of hashtag MeToo and hashtag Time's Up, people were really pushing for that, and I feel like that had more traction than some previous movements.
Okay.
So without people maybe even consciously realizing it, they're seeing more positive results in voicing opinions, and they're seeing more positive results in standing together and asking and almost demanding politicians do the right thing. This will come in conflict, however, with what I was saying earlier, how we like to talk past each other as a culture now. But I think we're going to iron this out to the point where the pendulum is going to swing a little bit back on talking past each other and actually listening to each other and saying, okay, we don't see eye to eye, but we still have to fix this problem. Right, because that's going to be where the conversation ultimately ends up. We can't do nothing. You know, we can't. A different flavor of nothing is still nothing. Thoughts and prayers, while nice, are not going to remove this problem. We need some positive change to do something different. And I think as I see these protests evolving on different topics, I do see more and more traction in gaining, or I should say more traction in progress. So the time scope I'm thinking of is about 15 to 20 years, actually. There's a lot of momentum to overcome. You know, a lot of people swear and say, okay, you know, this, I know I'm right with this, and they're the people not listening yet. And that's everywhere. That's every side of this issue. The solution's going to be found somewhere in the middle. We need to change how we dialogue. More and more cultural pushes are going to come through. We're going to be better as a culture learning how to have that any of those conversations. And then it's going to swing back around to conversations already ongoing, like what to do with mass shootings in America. And finally, we'll be able to dig in and make some progress. It will probably get worse before it gets better, but I do actually see it getting better.
One of the things that stopped the war in Vietnam was massive demonstrations by young people. And I remember reading that the demonstrations in Washington, D.C. really spooked Nixon. And, you know, it got bigger and bigger, and then, you know, it came to, you know, a halt. The war stopped, you know, in 75. So if this April demonstration is successful, if there are millions of young people throughout the country that demonstrate, the NRA isn't going to all of a sudden say, oh, we're going to be, like, not useful anymore, or we can't influence like we used to. I mean, the NRA is still going to be out there doing their thing. What do you think a massive demonstration across the country with young people will do?
Well, I think, as I just said in the previous answer, I think it's going to be a push to bringing people together who disagree to at least have the conversation instead of talking past each other. Like right now, I would say the NRA probably talks right past the victims and their families. And then there's people who want every gun confiscated whatsoever in this country, and they're just talking right past the NRA. So it's a matter of, We need to have good conversations on a national level, and I think we're going to get there. I saw an interesting article recently that said, you know, democracy isn't just about going out and doing your vote once a year. The strongest thing you can do for democracy is to actually be involved. And that connects with former Supreme Court leader Brandis, who said the most, and I'm going to badly butcher this misquote, but it's the sentiment that matters, the most important public office a person can hold is that of citizen. And so if we start as a nation getting back into that citizen mindset, which is kind of like I said earlier, that Levittown experiment and going into the suburbs and American can-do attitude, that had a citizen mindset. If we can go back to being stronger citizens, we're going to learn how to talk to each other and make solutions that just aren't on the table yet. Solutions that maybe even the seeds of that solution haven't been discussed yet, because people are still on the far sides of the conversation. It's almost like a bad middle school dance. Nobody's in the middle dancing. They're all just kind of listening to the music on their extreme edges. And we got to evolve that. We got to go back out and meet people somewhere in the middle.
Now, the national demonstration is going to be in 2 months, and I'm sure your students will be talking about it. You'll be watching it. So as this progresses, would you come back on Focus on Albany and share your thoughts about, you know, how successful this might be and what the outcome would be?
Yeah, I don't mind at all coming back out and talking on it, and hopefully what I said is correct or inspired someone. But if it's not correct, I'm going to still keep trying to find a solution for this.
Thanks, Jason. So you've been listening to Jason Muckford, who we're pretty friendly, and I respect him for the fact that he decided to run for president in 2016. And we've talked about this a couple of times, but you ran as a write-in candidate. How many other people in New York State did that? Do you know?
The official list had 33 write-in candidates on it, and of the 33 of them, I think I got the 7 most votes. But
good.
You know, there were people were on there that were just not on the regular ballot who were in on the ballot in other states. So like, Evan McMullen was on as a write-in. Daryl Castle, I think, it was the constitutionalist. You know, so some people who were on the ballot in other states had to be write-ins. So I was really proud that I had a last-minute surprise campaign and did as well as I had done. And that speaks – actually, it speaks to the issue we're talking about today. The number one feedback that I got, like across the board, anybody who said that they considered voting for me, whether they did or they didn't, they said they loved that I was willing to listen to ideas other than my own, and they really felt listened to. And they said that's what our – well, they said that's what our politics need more. I think that's what our whole society needs more. So I'm still pushing that platform, whether I'm running for an office or not, taking the time to really listen to somebody.
Thanks,
that's what's going to actually – yeah.
Go ahead.
I was going to say that – if we're talking about really making America great again, it doesn't matter Republican or Democrat. We just need to listen to each other more and be willing to work through sometimes hard conversations without getting violent about it. So thank you,
Jason,
for having me on.
I look forward to talking with you again. You're listening to Jason Muckford, and if you like this show, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter. Download on your smartphone, subscribe to iTunes. If you have a comment about this show, hashtag Focus on Albany. I'd like to share a thought right now with everybody that's listening. I get very few people who, they listen, but there's no dialogue between what I say or what my guest says and what you guys are thinking. So I would really like to start a dialogue on my Focus on Albany Facebook page. So what Jason had mentioned in this interview, share your thoughts, and maybe I'm thinking Focus on Albany can become a community forum, even though it's online. Thanks, everybody. Thanks, Jason. Have a great day.
You're welcome.
We'll talk again soon.